Welcome back to Dandelions, a podcast for women. It's Molly and Julie here, and we're going to talk today about a difficult topic for some, like Julie. We're going to talk about death today, and quickly I'm going to say that we always start by a little explanation as to where dandelions comes from, and that is we think women have a lot in common with dandelions. We think women are strong, bright, resilient. You can try to poison us or stomp us out, but we will just pop right back up. And so just like dandelions, see, there's a whole point here. Just like dandelions and humans, there's a life cycle and all things die,
oh God.
Julie, including dandelions. So
right. Dandelions come back. People apparently...
Not the same dandelion,
I don't know. We're going to find out today that maybe some people are like hanging out right here.
Right. Well, and we do have a medium with us here, and we do have a funeral director here. And so we have two women who are both have a lot of experience with death in very different and yet I'm sure overlapping ways. But first, I want to know, Julie, why are you so freaked out about death? And I'm not saying that I'm not.
I'm picking on you.
But
you are decked out in skeleton wear right now. So you're right. Not freaked out by death.
But I am, but in a different way. But we'll get to that. But what is it?
I don't know.
Have you always been this way?
I don't think I've always been this way. Okay. I think I probably just fear losing people. I think that's one thing.
And you have lost people. You've lost both your parents.
Right. And a brother not even a year ago, friends. But who hasn't lost people? But I think it's also if there are like spirits around, we watch scary movies and it's always the difficult or the evil spirit that's lurking, right? So that's kind of part of it too. Like there's just something evil out there. And I don't think spirits are evil necessarily. And so that's what I hope that we maybe meet some nice non-evil spirits. But that's what the movies are about the evil spirits, and it's scary and things come out in the dark. And, you know, I'm always thinking, well, they don't just come out in the dark. They're probably always there. But it's just, I don't know. It's just a little... It creeps me out.
Well, and the whole idea for this show came about many months ago. And it started because Julie and I have a mutual friend who's a realtor. And she invited me over to a house that she was paid to empty out after a woman had died. And she was going to empty out the house and then she was going to sell it, the house. But the family paid her to do the some of the other work prior to selling the house. And she asked me if I wanted to come over, among other friends. And basically, she'd already taken all the stuff that the family wanted or they were going to sell that was worth money. But she knows I like things like vintage wrapping paper and stuff that like wasn't really going to be worth anything. And so I went over there and I just had a heyday. I took all of her towels for one. She had just like the cutest bath towels that are probably from the 70s or with just, you can tell by the floral print on them. Hand towels, bath towels. That was really the stuff that got me. And I told Julie that these were my primary towels. And you would have thought that I told her that I was sleeping in bed with a cadaver. I mean,
I lost it. And we didn't know at the time. We had not been formally introduced. Molly and I had not been formally introduced to each other at that time. We knew who each other were, right? And so a few months ago, we were talking and I said, yeah, I was at that house. I was at that house too. And then I said, oh my gosh, somebody died probably at that house. And then it came to me, the realization that we have dead people's stuff. Right. Molly, of course, was like, well, yeah, no problem. And I'm like, oh my gosh, running through my head, what did I take from that house? Right. What things do I now need to remove from my house? And I said, I don't want dead people's stuff in my house. I don't want a house that where people died in. And then Molly just, I remember you calmly looked at me because I said, I'm afraid somebody may have died in my house and I would like to know that. And you said, well, you live in an older house, don't you? And immediately I knew what you were saying is that there's a 99.9% chance somebody since 1800 and something died in your house.
That is what I was saying.
That's what you were saying without
saying it. I know, and it really fucked you up.
It big time. And every, you know, I go to that.
I didn't mean for it to.
So when I go to your house, I'm like, are those the towels? Are those the towels? Are those the dead people's towels? I don't want to use dead people's stuff.
Here's the thing, and this is a whole nother podcast, because I just want to say that unless you're going to come over and take a shower at my house, which you probably aren't, but I did just have a conversation, then you probably don't have to worry about using the mostly bath towels that are in regular rotation at my house. But I am going to segue real quick and tell you that I once had a acquaintance friend who came over to pick her son up from our house, who was playing with my son, and she asked me if she could quickly take a shower. Now, this is like one of those things where what would you think of that? Is that absolutely, like if someone says, can I use your bathroom? You're like, of course you can use
my
bathroom.
Why did she need to take a shower? Did you ask?
She said that she was a mother of 5 children. And she was very busy. And I think that this was like a potential window of opportunity for her to show. I don't really know why, but I do want to say that I said yes. And honestly, I realized she's just kind of later. It's actually one of the things I really love about her. She's just kind of a quirky person. And I really thought that that was kind of cool that she felt comfortable enough to say to me, can I take a shower? Even though I was very, and I'm very laid back person about things like that, but I was very taken aback by that. But
did you inform her that she'd be drying off with dead people's towels?
No, I didn't.
Okay, okay.
But
okay,
see,
I think that's a little more strange. Okay. But yeah, go use my shower, by the way.
I digress. Okay, anyway, back to the topic at hand, Anyway, so I'm really excited to jump in and talk to our guests. I personally have had a lot of experience, not a lot, but a fair share of experience with death and the loss of my father, who I was very, very close to. So I feel like I really went through all the grieving processes, and now 10 years in, I'm still dealing with what that means to lose someone who's your safety net and living life when there's just, it's just pretty much you taking care of you and your friends and other family, but you know that you don't have that person anymore. So I've struggled with death in that way. And then other than that, I've been fortunate in that, you know, we've mostly had to struggle with death of pets, which I am not undermining that. That is very serious stuff. And both my sons have struggled immensely with the loss of pets. Moving on, I'm going to start by introducing Elaine. She is a funeral director of 16 years.
Hello.
Hi, Elaine. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I've known Elaine for a really long time in many different ways. We're both writers and we both have a lot of similar interests. But my favorite story about Elaine pertains to death, of course. It was in 2009, 2010 maybe. I was told, I'm in my day job or my regular job, I'm a journalist, I'm always writing quirky stories for On Milwaukee, and someone told me that there was a plant at the Milwaukee Public Museum that was flowering for the first time in 15 or 20 years. And it was called, aptly, a corpse flower. And the reason it was called that is because it only... When it bloomed every 15 to 20 years, it apparently smelled like rotting flesh slash a dead body, a corpse, whatever. And I knew that my friend Elaine was a funeral director. And the first thing that I thought of was, who would know better if this indeed was an accurate portrayal or accurate assessment of the smell than Elaine? And Elaine, being the awesome person that she is, went down to the museum and gave it a sniff.
It really did. It really did smell. It smelled like that. It was really something. It's not a good smell.
But,
and I can't really describe it.
You got to smell all those bodies?
They don't all smell, but every once in a while there is one.
So, I mean, how much though do you really deal with bodies? Because your job has a lot to do with family and making plans and stuff, right?
Correct.
Just tell us a little bit about that.
So I mostly, the funeral home where I work at, we have, you know, several staff members that only, their primary job is to work with the deceased persons directly. Like they take care of embalming and they take care of restorative work, like, you know, fixing someone up after they've been in a car accident, you know, reconstructing an ear or something. You know, my job is mostly to meet with families and, you know, take care of all the arrangements, take the funerals out, you know, conduct the funerals at the funeral home or at church. However, I had to learn everything. You have to learn everything because, for example, I could be at church and maybe that deceased person is having a problem. Maybe that deceased person needs their lips touched up, or maybe they're not propped up the way they should be.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, sorry. Or maybe
spare no details, please.
Maybe they do smell not the greatest. So, you know, we have to manage. I have to know how to manage that. And maybe they're also like kind of leaking a fluid or something somewhere. I'm sorry, Julie.
I'm literally going to pass out over.
But so I have to know how to do those things, you know. So I do have experience with it.
And didn't you at one time go, or was this when you were still in school, or was this shortly after you were out of school? You went and you'd actually pick up bodies sometimes, weren't you on call?
Yes.
What do you mean pick up bodies? Like the coroner? Coroner's office?
At the coroner, at the nursing home, at the hospice, at the family house, wherever they die. I used to have to go out very often. Like it was at that time when I was a student was primarily when I was doing that. So it was about every other night at that time. Now I still am on call, but I more take the phone calls when the nurse at the nursing home calls and reports the death or, you know, that kind of thing. But I still do have to go out if somebody dies at their residence. They send a funeral director along with the students. So
you went to school for this?
Yes.
So it wasn't like you had a job and then you thought, I want to do that. Like you knew in school, like, this is what I want to study. This is what I want to do, which I find amazing if that's the case.
Not really. Okay. I mean, I did have to go to school, but I got a bachelor's degree in English at UWM, which, you know, I was in creative writing and all that kind of stuff. And I finally graduated and I thought, wow, I can't find a job. And so I just went to the MATC website and was looking at what they had to offer. So I saw funeral service and I was curious about it and looked into it. And at the same time, a book had just come out called Stiff by Mary Roach. I don't know, Molly, if you had read that, about what they do with cadavers when you donate your body to science. But it was very interesting. And it kind of fed my interest in the field. And then I just signed up for school. And then I applied for a student apprentice position at the funeral home and they hired me. So I didn't know if it was something that I would want to do, but all of a sudden there I was immersed in it.
Right, right.
And it stuck. I really enjoyed it.
16 years later.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
somebody has to do it.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about it?
I like that day to day, you never know what you're going to walk into. Go to work in the morning and you literally don't know what you're going to do. Maybe you're meeting, you know, with families. Maybe I have to go to a family house to pick someone up. Maybe I'm going to a church I've never been to on the other side of town, or, you know, it's just a different experience every day. But I think in addition to that, what I like most is meeting the families, because you get to hear their loved ones' stories about their lives, what they've been through, what they did, you know, the funny things about them. And, you know, I don't know. It's just very interesting. It's kind of, there's a voyeuristic aspect to it that mm-hmm. I enjoy, which sounds creepy.
It's kind of like a wedding planner.
I get it.
It kind of reminds
completely.
Me.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me think of
weird
a wedding planner.
Types.
Yeah.
Only you're not, you know, at a wedding. Do you know what I mean? Like you're guiding people through something that is big and major and important and personal and has a lot of moving parts.
And Julie, mm-hmm. I think, you know, we've had this conversation once briefly before and I couldn't continue it because you didn't want me to. But I've thought for years about that very thing, about how I really, really love planning events and I'm really interested in death. And I thought it would be really, and I know that I'm Generation X and I know that My generation and generations younger than me are going to do funerals and are doing funerals differently.
Oh, for sure.
And I thought, what if you were a party planner, but for funerals? And I know this exists already. I've done a lot of research on it. It's just not something that we live in a fairly conservative city. And so it's not here going to happen. But, you know, on the coast, this is big. You know, what if you had a themed funeral and you had a funeral planner? I've read taglines like, we put the fun back in funeral. You know, I've seen some really, like, some really ballsy things that are, we would say so, but that really are trying to take the fear and the stigma out of a
right.
funeral. And I've been very inspired by that, so much so that I've even named my fictitious fabled company. I would call it After Party. So
I could see that. Right? I could totally see that.
I've been having this idea roll around. And if anyone wants to steal this idea, like who's listening, please go for it. Cause I don't think I'm going to do it at this point. It's like one of those roads not taken, but I have been like following all these different death stories and learning as much as I can and thinking that I might go that route and been fascinated by Elaine and other people I know are in the industry. But anyway, at this point, I'm going to stick with my gig and stick not move it. On into the death industry yet. But I am going to move on to talk to our second guest. That's Stacy Tatera. Am I saying that correctly? Yes.
Yes.
And she is a medium.
Yes, I am.
And what does that mean?
That's a great question. Something that freaks Julie out.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Julie and I have known each other a long time, too. And so
probably 25 years, but yeah.
It's been a long time. So a psychic medium, basically, I am an intuitive and I also speak to spirit. And so I have a business, actually on the south side, just south of the airport. I have a wellness center and I see clients on a very regular basis. I'm also a Reiki master teacher, so I work a lot with energy and energy healing. I also work with medicinal aromatherapy, angel cards, and I do a lot of teaching and spiritual counseling. And I think a lot of times, you know, we're looking at more of that body physical piece of it when we talk about the funeral director. And I am dealing more with the spiritual and the energetic processing after we're done with this lifetime. And they all go hand in hand. But I think a lot of what I'm doing is helping people manage their grief as well as helping them to have a better understanding of what happens when we do pass and make our transition, what that potentially looks like. And through messages from spirit, it often gives people the peace of mind that they need and the healing and the closure that they need to be able to move forward in their own lives and continue to live healthy lives. Because, you know, we have this expectation, I think, that we're going to live until we're 95, 100 years old, and that's not the reality of it. And so I see grieving widows and I who are very young and still have an opportunity to remarry and potentially have more children. And then I see parents who have lost children and I see people who have lost parents. So I see a lot of different situations and scenarios, and it's amazing. It can be heavy because grief is a heavy emotional processing. And so my job is to really help people in that process.
So what do you think happens when someone dies? Like what's, break it down for me as much as you can. Like what do you think and what's the time frame and is it energy that remains or just you tell us?
So the way I understand it is, and the way that I see things is, we're all energy. And so energy does not die. And so what happens is, we're a soul and we incarnate and we choose our vehicle, we choose our body, and we choose a lot of the experiences that we're going to have while we're here in this lifetime. We have free will along the way, so we get to make our choices and our decisions. But once we do make our transition, we just shift into a different energetic space. And so some of us call it the other side, some of it would call it heaven. But we just are basically shifting into a different energetic space and we continue our work and our healing on a soul level. So that's how I understand it, and that's how I connect into energies that have passed. So I'm connecting with the essence of who they were so that I can validate that this is your loved one, whether it's, you know, the personality of somebody. They'll give you some pretty solid validations, but they're really there to, you know, ensure that this person is living their best life and helping them be proactive in various ways. And they'll talk about that they saw or are aware of things going on in someone's life or even with their children. I could tell you story after story about how spirit has, in a message to a family member, alerted them that potentially some medical things might be coming up. And I had one gentleman, his daughter had passed and his daughter, his other daughter and wife had come in, and the daughter had said, there's somebody really struggling with something in their throat, and nobody could validate it. So they went home and they told this man that this was the message, and he'd been having issues with his throat, went to the doctor. He had cancer. And if he had not gone in to get checked out, he would have potentially had a problem. And he came in and actually thanked me.
Wow. Wow.
So that's the amazing piece of what these readings do. They're big and they can be very important in terms of helping people to have, you know, that push they need to get medical help or even emotional assistance. And so spirit, what that shows you is they're still on the other side championing that for us, if I should speak, and really wanting us to see and learn everything that we can for our highest self and our highest being while we're here. And that's like one of how many stories of spirit coming in and helping someone that way. So the love doesn't die.
And I've got to say this. I've known Stacey, as I said, for about 25 years, and we were in a totally different, you know, doing different things than we are today. And so when she started to talk about, you know, having this, I don't know if you call it a skill or I don't know what you refer to.
A gift.
I was like, yeah, okay, great. You know, let's do a shot. I just wasn't there. And then she would talk about it some more. And I was like, nah, I'm not going for that. This is just weird. You know, you have fun with your little side hobby, a little side hustle. She's doing this full time. And that's great. But I've met people who have had readings with her and felt the same way. Like at first they were like, no, this is not true, that nobody has this. And they told me stories that pretty much stopped me in my tracks. And I said, oh, okay. My husband, who you know, Charles, he wants a reading. Like he really wanted to be here.
So how do you do it exactly? Like what is, I mean, I want to go with all the stereotypes, the seance, the Ouija board, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. Do we need to dim the light? Like,
no, I mean, what do you use? Like if someone comes to you or how does it work?
It's interesting because my connection was always with angels and I was very young and I always felt that angelic energy. So I always felt very guided and supported by this angelic realm. And the way I explain to people is that we have spirit teams that walk this life with us. And they're team members that are there to really help us out and to guide us if we listen. If we get tuned in and tapped into ourselves enough through meditation, through prayer, to really allow ourselves to hear what our teams have to say. Now, our teams are potentially made up of what we would call angelic beings, light beings, loved ones who have passed, spirit guides, and so forth. But what happened was when I was younger, I lost a family member. And within a few weeks of him passing, I started to smell something like jelly almost. And every time I smelled that, I knew that it was this person. And so that's kind of how it started to kick off. And then over the years, because I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, I grew up out east and I didn't move to the Midwest till I was 25. And then I moved to Milwaukee to take a job in radio and I was 27. And that's when I met Julie because we were at the same station. And so I would just have these experiences and it just kept evolving and evolving and evolving. So after a while, you get to a point where I decided to get certified. I took courses. I was always reading lots of books, lots of information as much as I could. You know, it was like you're reading a book where someone's speaking your language because you feel a little freakish, right? So basically now I'm at a point because I've been seeing clients for about 11 years is that, and I've been doing it full-time close to 4 and because I was in corporate for 20 years. And the way that I see it is that when I look at you, and I will say I don't walk around with this turned on. So when I'm working, I'm working. When I'm not, I'm not. And so people often ask me, do you walk around and are you inundated? I said, no, I can't do that or my head would explode, right? So I really do shut it down. And then when I'm working and I have clients in front of me, I'm tuning into the energy around you. And so what I see is more in my mind's eye, in my third eye, than it is someone apparitioning in front of me. I don't like that. Like I've had apparitions. My grandfather did a full apparition when I was like 10 years old. And I would like ran out of the room screaming because it scared the shit out of me. You know, you're 10 years old and you see, and that happens to a lot of people. So I got to a point where I was like, I just would talk to my spirit team. I was like, I do not need to see full apparitioned individuals standing in front of me. So it's very much they show me things in my mind's eye. I hear things, I see things, and everything energetically moves through me. So the way I kind of do it so that I can determine whose side of the family, like, so your mom's side will always come in on your left side, on your heart side, and your dad's side will come in on your right side. So that's how I can determine. And then the family members go out from there. Children tend to stand in the front. And then friends kind of weave their way in. In-laws will stand even further out. So it's kind of like a family ancestry, right? Depending on who's coming in. And then I tap in and I can immediately tell it's male, female. It feels more like a mother, grandmother figure or even a great grandmother. It's really not uncommon to have, you know, generations of people and they just kind of stand behind them. And then if they want to step forward, then I tune into that and I listen to what they have to say.
So people come to you because they want to be in contact with someone who already died. It's not like I don't come to you and say, will you tell me when I'm going to die? Will you tell me when my kids are going to die? Will you tell me, you know, or do you do that as well?
I mean, no, okay. I always like to explain it. I work in the light. So I deal with that high vibrational energy. I'm dealing with what I would call that love energy. And so there have even been times when there's a family member, a client has come in and said, I really was hoping to hear from that person. They're not going to step forward. And I can tell that there's just some shit that maybe went down in this lifetime. Mm. And they're just not ready to step forward. And so I need to communicate that in a way with some softness and compassion that, you know, that energy is just not ready to come in. But I don't see when those types of things. However, when someone comes in and they say, you know, my grandmother's been really sick and I'm concerned, and I will get a feeling that we're heading down like the last few weeks. And I sometimes I say something and sometimes I don't. Energy moves so quickly and shifts and changes that even with the psychic, it's more prescriptive than it is predictive anymore. So I think sometimes people get nervous or scared to come see someone like me because they don't want to hear bad news. That's not how I work. And spirit is beautiful in how they help me to communicate and really translate the messages that are supposed to be very helpful. Now, sometimes people need a spiritual kick in the ass. There is no question. But they, even with that, are very good at how they come through and give you that information.
What's a spiritual kick in the ass?
Basically get your head out of your ass and stop being a moron with you're living your life. So if someone's stuck in a relationship or there's an addiction issue or they're not taking care of themselves and they flat out know they need to make changes and they're not doing it, spirit's like, what you waiting for? I mean, they're pretty direct. And that's why I said the beautiful piece of that is that we can tap into that. So that's the other piece. I try to really help people continue to have a relationship with the loved one who has passed, even though they've made their transition. So you can still talk to them. You can still, you know, sit down and allow that energy to come into your space and just sit and be in that energy. So I really do try to help people understand that, yes, they're no longer here in the physical, but they're still in that energetic spiritual realm, and we can still very much stay connected to that energy.
So is it something people learn and then they can do it on their own? Or is it something that they come to you and experience multiple times?
So that's a good question. I really try to empower my clients to do what they can on their own because I don't want anyone dependent on me. And we have these gifts and these skills if we choose to open up to them. Everybody has an intuition. Everybody can tune in. It's just a matter of whether or not you feel comfortable doing it. And so I really try to encourage people, if they're ready and open to that, to there are a couple things that they can do to bring that energy in. And again, it's through prayer, it's through meditation. Nature is such a beautiful space to be in. You know, go outside, sit in a park or sit down by the lake and just call that energy in. And what does that feel like to you? And then know that when that energy comes in, that's what that's going to feel like to you. But I think one of the biggest challenges people face is that when an energy or a loved one passes and they don't feel them, that's when people get a little freaked out. And I do tell them they're kind of busy on the other side. They got stuff going on. I mean, I've had spirit and, you know, people with past come through and say, I got a job. Like, I'm working with kids on the other side, or I'm working with animals, because I do see pets in readings a lot. And so animals do come through and let us know that they're with loved ones as well.
So walk me through this. So you were talking about, you know, when your grandfather passed and seeing maybe another relative after they had died when you were younger. At what point do you go and you tell your friends and your family, I have this gift? And were you scared to do that? And were you shunned? I mean, what were they like? Oh, we just need you to see a therapist, or, oh, right. You just, you know, you're just,
mm-hmm.
you're just dreaming, yeah, or, right. you know, she's very dramatic. What was that? I know your mom.
Right. You know. Well, mom's super open. My mom was always into this stuff too. Like, she was very open. And so she was very good.
Does she have the gift, though?
She doesn't have the mediumship gift, but she is incredibly intuitive and can read people. Like, Julie's her favorite. Like, she knew I was coming here today, and she's like, oh my God, tell Julie it's
hi. Hi, Linda.
She loves Julie, right. And so she gets a read on people really quickly. But what's interesting, and I kind of explained it, like, she tends to see, like, the dark side of people, where I'm always, like, looking at their potential. So when I see somebody, I tend to see the person that they could be versus, like, where they're at, kind of thing. It's kind of interesting. But at any rate, so my family knows what I do, and sometimes it's okay to talk about, and sometimes it's not. And I've just accepted that it's uncomfortable for some people and it's not uncomfortable for others. And so I have enough. It took a while for me to really deal with that because it was hurtful. And years ago, I was like, well, I have to prove myself to these people that this is what I do. And that, and then you get to a point where you're like, I don't prove anybody anything to anyone because this is what I do. And I love and accept myself for what I do. And I can't be responsible for what other people think or feel about that,
good,
including
good.
My family.
Excellent. You must get that too, Elaine. Are they taken aback when you say you're a funeral director? Or what kind of responses do you get?
Sometimes people are freaked out. They're like, oh my gosh, that's awful. That's terrible. How can you do that? And then there's other people that will say, oh, that's really nice. It's a, you know, it's a good, helpful thing to do for people in a bad time, helping a family through that. And then there's the people that are just really curious that are like, oh my gosh, what, does a dead person sit up?
That would be you, right?
Can a dead person sit up?
No, I'm just kidding. When people ask me that, I'm like, oh yeah, they sit up all the time. They're just like, oh, we're like, oh, we've got to strap that one down again.
Oh, no.
Set up.
Strapped down.
Have you ever had someone come that was you thought was dead that wasn't really
okay,
dead?
Okay, that's what I want to know.
That's never happened to us.
Oh, thank God.
We've heard stories about that.
Okay.
Like where they have like a low pulse or something. And
right.
Someone didn't notice.
There was something in the news about that maybe a year ago, not in Milwaukee, but, you know, it was in the news. I guess it does happen. I've not ever experienced that, thank God.
So are people coming to you a lot of times to pre-plan? You know, because we talk about how Milwaukee might not be ready for these celebration of life type of things, but I could see like writing my own obituary. Maybe that's a bit vain, right? I want to make sure people get it right.
I've already planned the soundtrack of the music.
I am not surprised. Okay. We just got to get the venue, right?
I'm not exactly sure how. I think it's going to be a really small affair, actually, but I certainly am going to be very particular about what the music is played at whatever.
Was it like invite only?
You're invited.
Okay.
All right.
Just want to make sure.
No, Julie, it's going to be chihuahuas only. I'm a chihuahua nut. You may or may not know that about me.
But entire podcast.
Only chihuahuas are invited to my funeral.
Are you going
to
send me like a Google invite?
Well, I don't have that part all figured out, but I did make Royal take notes in terms of what are my funeral songs. So they can definitely be a part of the whatever ceremony. I need to give it more thought. Hopefully it won't be for another, 50 years. But
well, and I think that's the difference. If you can plan, make it positive and make it something fun, that's, I think, markedly different than when somebody dies unexpectedly and people are freaked out, or, of course, the death of a young person or just someone you didn't expect or in a horrific manner. That, I think, is just, and I wonder if maybe it's because we think, oh my God, that could be me and I don't want to die. Now, some people might say, well, it's because you haven't, proclaim Jesus Christ as your personal savior and you're afraid that you're not going to go to heaven. I don't know that that's completely it. I believe in God, several of them. But it just, I don't know. There's a little bit of a, if I say ick factor?
No,
I don't want it on my mind. Maybe it makes me think of losing people, makes me sad that they're not here. But now Stacey's telling us they are here. Right. Do people ever come to you and they're like, okay, and they're upset because you can't get to their grandma or something, and they're like, oh.
One of the things that I've learned is, and when I begin doing a reading, I always will explain kind of the process so people know what to expect. And I can't guarantee who will or won't come in. But what we do have to understand and trust is that who's meant to come through will absolutely come through for you. So that's how, and because I've had people, I can get multiple energetic spirits coming in one reading. So that's kind of nice. You're not just hearing from one individual. Sometimes it is, and sometimes that's all that person wants to hear from. So if it's a parent who's lost a child or a person who's recently lost their spouse, it's okay if we spend the bulk of the time, because that's really their loving that they're getting. It's almost like they come in, sit down in a chair in the room, and they're able to have a conversation. And so it just depends. There are times when someone says, well, I was really hoping that this person would come through today. And I say, well, you have to really trust that who came through for you today was intended. And it's not to say if you don't come back at another time, because I usually tell people, I don't want to see you for another 3 to 6 months at least, because you need time to process. You need time to work through what you need to work through based on the messages and the insights that you received. And so it happens, but I know so much of that it goes the way that it should that it doesn't really,
And could spirits be busy? Or maybe we already said that. So somebody might say, oh, I really wanted to tap into this person or was hoping they'd come through, but can they be with multiple people?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that spirit is doing. And then there are spirits that I've said they've already incarnated. They're back again. And I can feel that they've started another lifetime.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. We did not. Wait.
That's so cool.
So
are they always as babies? Or do you mean like they could be all of a sudden like they could have
a bird?
Well, yeah. I mean, anything's possible.
Or something that's already in existence. Or do they come back new and fresh?
Typically it's to start a new lifetime.
A new life. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I wasn't prepared for.
Well, we live many lifetimes.
Mm. Well, you read about the people that, a kid is somewhere in the world and then the kid's like, oh, remember that time when I flew the airplane in the war? And, parents are like, what the heck are you talking mm-hmm. about? Like, shut
or
up.
Described.
And then they research mm-hmm. about, like, the kid will say, I was on this ship so-and-so or whatever, and then they'll look it up and it existed and there was, and they'll say, my name's not Tommy, my name's John, don't call me Tommy, my name's John. And then they find out that
was like a great grandfather or something.
Yeah, the mm-hmm. kid did exist mm-hmm. in a past life mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. but for some reason being a kid, I don't know, that
you're more open. Kids are way more open.
They're closer to,
well, and our kids are definitely wired very differently today energetically and spiritually than, let's say, even us and then our own children, because Julie and I have kids that are virtually the same ages. She has two boys, I have two girls. And so, and my oldest is gifted. She sees spirit. She's 16, and the youngest is super sensitive too. And I kind of joke, this is like the funny stuff I talk about. Lily was upstairs, and all of a sudden I heard her yell, "Mom, there's a man in the hallway." And I said, "Is he dead or alive?" And she said, "He's dead." I'm like, "Okay, we're good." So like, I kind of joke, like, a day in the life, but yeah, like, it's a little crazy town sometimes. But my house is very peaceful. I sage and, you know, clears my space often. And where I work, people walk in and they immediately are like, "Oh my God, it feels so good in here." So, you know, I am energetically responsible as far as clearing space, making sure people are super comfortable. But yeah, we live a lot of lifetimes. Brian Weiss wrote Many Lives, Many Masters, and it's a fascinating book. And he approaches it from the medical perspective and then starts hypnosis for this client. And I think she wound up regressing into 82 or 84 lives.
I have a question for both of you. We're coming to the end here, so I want to make sure and get this out there because I'm super curious about this. And that is, if based on your work, do you feel less afraid of dying than the average person, would you say? Like, is there something about dying that are you still scared of it? Are you not scared of it at all? Where are you on that personally?
Well, I used to, when I was younger, when I first started this, I kind of felt cocky about it. Like, oh yeah, you know, I'm in charge of this. I take care of this. I take care of death. I see death every day. It's no big deal.
I'm the death master.
Yeah, you know, like, whatever. You know, people die all the time. It's, you know, you just get this idea that happens to other people. That happens to that person over there. Oh, that poor family there dealing with this. It's really sad. It's terrible. But that's them. Mm-hmm. It's not me, you know. And so now I think more that I'm getting older, I'm starting to be more afraid of it. Very recently, I just kind of had this revelation. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And it, you know, terrified me for the first time in my whole life where I thought, you know, because I would joke like, oh, you know, I can't wait for the big sleep. You know, I'm so tired from working, or, you know, this, you know, life gets you down or whatever. I'm just want the big sleep. I want it to just be all over. It'll be done. And then now I'm like, oh my gosh, I really like, I like life. This is really nice. It's pretty great here. I don't want to
die. Well, it's what we know, right?
Yeah.
Like there's the,
and then too, that goes into it too, because I don't know why, but I'm pretty hardcore atheist. And so that's why what you're talking about with the energy living on, I'm just kind of like, wow, but so for me as an atheist, will I just die and that'll be it? Or will I still linger on like that as an energy, as a spirit? I don't know.
So in my experience, excuse me, it doesn't matter what religion, you're a soul. You're a soul, you're a being. We are basically a spiritual being in a human form. So, you know, I've had all kinds of people from all kinds of belief systems come in to see me. And, you know, in the readings, I can't be responsible for how they interpret what they're receiving. But most of the time, they leave feeling peaceful and knowing this isn't the end. So am I afraid to die? No, but I want as much time here as I can because I got shit to do. Like, mm-hmm. I got kids to raise.
You're here.
Right? And I know that I'm here to evolve spiritually. And for my personal path, so much of me helping others to heal has been my own healing journey. And so I've had to do a lot of my own digging in and my own healing. And so I'm just trying to do what I can to do my part in that. Mm-hmm. Do I want to die tomorrow? No, because I enjoy cupcakes and mm-hmm. other things way too much. But, you know, I love my family, but I want as much time as I can and to have as many experiences. So I think it puts things in a different perspective, like enjoy life while you're here.
Absolutely.
So can you... this is putting you on the spot, and this may not be the
approach. Well, I don't think you're going to like it because your brother's here. And I thought I was going to go over here.
Okay, can we do this?
Go for it.
What do you see or what do you feel?
So did he have like a really outgoing personality?
Somewhat.
Okay.
I mean, maybe not as annoying and outgoing as me.
What's his first name?
Brian.
And did he live out west?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he didn't live here.
Mm-mm.
But you were close.
We texted a lot.
Yeah.
And we talked.
She tells me that you guys were like, you were connected. And then he's very sick when he passes. Is there an illness around his passing?
He had just had surgery. He had had a surgery.
He said, I'm not well. And he talks about like there being a sickness or an illness around why he makes his transition. So he wants you to know that the one thing that he brings forward is how much he loves you. And I feel like circumstances kind of brought you two together and that he's very grateful that he had the time that he had with you. And I feel like he watches your boys a lot. Like he's with your boys, watching out for the boys. Did he play sports or was he involved in your boys play sports, right?
My boys do.
Because I feel like he's watching them do their thing in terms of them playing sports and stuff. But he comes across very much at peace now and very, did he have issues breathing?
You know, he died a little bit unexpectedly, but he had had surgery previous to that. And I think it was something related to the surgery as to why he passed away. But he had been very, very sad because my sister-in-law had passed away almost 5 years to the day that he died. So he was really heavy, heavy, as many people would be, in grief with that. So
no, he is very much at peace now. And I feel that he's doing some healing, but there, and I don't know if you have someone else that's stepping forward that had issues with lungs or breathing. And it could be a smoker, something along those lines.
I think it could be anybody I know. Mm-hmm. You know, when I think about it in family, yeah.
Did your dad smoke?
Yeah.
Because I feel him too. Because he talks about, did he have issues with his lungs?
Oh, he had a heart attack. I forgot.
Okay. Because it's like in my chest area. I know that's what happens. We call it psychic amnesia. And everybody's like, I don't know.
I forgot. He actually had a heart attack. Yeah. And he actually died and saw heaven and then came back. Mm-hmm. Which was very...
That happens often too. They'll say it's not your time. And I've seen some pretty intense situations where that's happened. But no, your brother's doing really well. Your dad's here too. So just so you know, because I tapped into you earlier and your dad and his father has passed, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he stands with your grandfather. And so did your dad have cancer or did your grandfather, somebody had cancer?
Yeah, my dad did.
Okay, because he tells me there's a cancer connection there. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't always take care of himself, though. Mm-hmm. He tells me he could have done a better job of taking care of himself. Mm-hmm. And then there's something about communication with the two of you. So did you not communicate well or were you on good terms? Because he talks about, was he kind of quiet and to himself?
He was, but we communicated every day.
Perfect, because I feel like that is what made him very happy. Mm-hmm. He also tells me he knows how much he's missed, but he also feels like he has a pretty good sense of humor too. Was he more dry?
Yes.
Yeah, because he makes me feel like he's more dry in terms of how he was. Mm-hmm. But he also talks about you're not the only child, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, because he tells me there's other children, and he's just like he beams with pride over his children. And then someone made him a grandfather. Is he a grandfather? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he talks about I'm a grandfather, and that's important to him too. He loves your spirit. He loves that you're – I have goosebumps all over. Hey. He's just awesome. He's very nice. He's – I just feel like he was more quiet in this lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I feel like maybe as he got older, he would be more open to saying, I love you. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he was like that, like when you were younger. Mm-hmm. And he tells me he works a lot. Mm-hmm. Like he worked a lot in this lifetime.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
So, my sister and I had to actually take him from work to go to the hospice.
Yeah. Like he was working all the time.
Oh, my
He's a professor, and he would not retire. He would not.
He loved his work, he tells me he felt great purpose in what he did in this lifetime. And then did he have, like, an office at home or a den where he had a lot of books and stuff?
Yes.
Because he shows me that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was a desk or something, and he would sit there a lot, or a chair. He had a space in there. And I feel like that's where he would retreat or he would go do what he needed to do. But he's doing really well, too, so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, either I'm going to just, like, burst into tears or I'm going to start making jokes because this is how I deal with things. So
it's a lot, and I think that's both. What people understand.
Knock, knock.
Like, yeah, it's It's a lot to process.
Well, and you haven't talked to these people, and it's like that's all you want to do is you want to communicate. Mm-hmm. You want to say, I love you. I want to see you one more time. How are you doing it? Do you think of me? Are you here? And
they absolutely
you just,
do.
You kind of make it up until today.
And I think what people need to understand too, and I know we have to wrap up, is that spirit is not mad at us for anything. Mm-hmm. I always kind of joke, we drop our ego and our bags at the gates. Mm. We're done. Mm-hmm. Those are things that we deal with in the human realm only. Mm. And so, will they have to work on things on the other side? Absolutely. But we need to understand, and I kind of am like, good, I won't take this crap to the other side. Like, it's done. And so, it's an unconditional love space that they're in. And I think we need to, you know, understand they are, in essence, who they were in this lifetime, but they're evolving even beyond that.
So they're not mad, which is good because I was a badass teenager.
So was I.
Can I ask a question, though?
Yes.
So I hear a lot of stories about, from the families that I serve, about their loved one while they are dying. And especially if somebody's in a hospice situation and the family's sitting with them, the dying person, you know, will oftentimes like act like they see another dead family
members waiting.
Yeah, that they're waiting. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes they start speaking, you know, if it's an old grandma who, you know, grew up speaking German, you know, they'll start speaking German out of nowhere. They haven't spoken it for 60 years.
They're ready to take them to the other side.
Is that them seeing?
Absolutely. It happens all the time. Yes. And they'll even, sometimes spirit will even say, like, my mom was there and my aunt was there. They'll tell me who was there when they made their transition. Or even if their spouse had already passed, like their wife or a sister or a child was waiting for them. And that happens all the time.
Is that, now, can the dying person see that? You know, kind of see those people at that time because they themselves being dying are much more open to those energies at that time? Or is it maybe that those spirits are there or those energies are there much more in a stronger way?
Well, they're definitely there.
They can present themselves.
Right. They're definitely there to help that person transition. And when we start to make our transition, we're half in and we're half out. So the way I see it is almost like you have one foot in and one foot out, like literally. And so they're opening up in ways that they wouldn't otherwise be because they're already starting their transition. So that absolutely happens a lot. And I want to party when I die too. Lots of music.
I think Alex, our engineer, I think, and a producer, I think like he's, it's something else, isn't it? I mean, it's, you don't even know what to think about it. But then as you're saying these things, it makes sense. It makes me feel better about death. It does. I mean, because you're talking about spirit and positive and, you know, they're not mad, you know. Sorry.
It's like all of the topics that we talk about on Dandelions is that these are real topics that are not considered polite party conversation, whatever. But quite honestly, these are the things I want to talk about all the time. And I think a lot of people have a lot of curiosities about this. And I also think that the more we talk about any taboo subject, obviously the less stigmatized it becomes. And then in hopes that, because ultimately everyone's worst fear is death. I do believe that on some level, in some way. And I think that if we can just be a little bit less freaked out about it, a little bit less out, more in the open about it, and also can plan for the kind of death that we would like to have, or not how we're going to die, obviously, but how we're going to be remembered, I think is pretty much as good as it gets, because we're all going to die. So,
hey, can we hook up? Like, seriously,
I'll meet you on the other side?
Right. So, like,
here's the good news. We travel in soul circles.
Oh.
And so there's a good chance that...
And they're not clicky, right?
No, they're pretty open, unconditional. But there are soul circles. So to really freak you out, you and Charles are married in this lifetime. But if you'd been together in another lifetime, the roles were different. And you could have been his daughter and he could have been your dad. Or you could have been his mom and he could have been your son. So that's what's interesting too.
Try not to think about that.
I know, right? Don't think about that too much.
Carry the one. I mean, this is harder to understand than ancestor DNA. Yeah. I mean, it's like,
you can't wrap your mind around it.
But at any rate, like,
wow.
Yeah. So it gets, like I said, and that's the kind of stuff that we just scratched the surface today.
Right.
And there's so much to get into around all of that. And it is fascinating and it's not mainstream. So it's, you know, unless you're my friend and we go have drinks, then sometimes this is what we talk about. And I don't mind answering questions, but it's so fascinating. And I've learned so much about it, obviously, with working with people. But everybody has a story. And that's why we can't judge. Because people go through such trauma I think the worst loss is losing a child.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the toughest things. And we have issues, you know, I've seen one heroin overdose, I've seen 40, you know. And so that's the kind of stuff that makes me sad. But if I can bring peace, and even in your processing with families, because you have such a sweet energy, like you bring people peace and you make that process that much easier. And if we can do that, then we're doing and sharing what we need to while we're here in this lifetime.
Dang. Thank you so much for being here today, Stacey and Elaine. The beautiful, beautiful conversation. And Julie, you made it.
I survived.
And I'm just I need to go away by myself for a couple days to process all this.
Yeah. You should just come in and have a reading.
I would love to.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Just make arrangements.
She's there.
I would love to. I will be doing that. So we're going to wrap it up though. We're going to say thank you to Go Get It Media for being the incredibly wonderful producers that they are of our podcast, and to On Milwaukee, who is our sponsor.
Let us do what we like doing.
They do.
Talking about stuff.
Yep, talking about stuff. So any parting words, or are we just going to let this fade into black?
fade into black, but it's not the big sleep. It's not the big sleep, okay? There's going to be some outro music, okay? And then we're going to get up and we're going to talk, okay?
All right.
And we're going to be back. This has been a little heavier than some of our other shows, but it's part of life, right?
Absolutely.
I always say death is part of life, but I mean, this has been really interesting, and thank you both for being here to share your perspective, because I know we needed it, and so do our followers and listeners. So I think it was really, really beneficial.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.